Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com. Hey folks, this is Eric Metaxas show. Yes, it's a show. This is not real. It's just a show that we put on. I often talk to my next guest. His name is John Zmirak. It's Z-M-I-R-A-K. John Zmirak, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Eric. Good to talk to you.
I want to talk to you about everything. First of all, most of your articles are at stream.org. Where are we in the nation? I just had a conversation with Tim Tebow. We didn't get into that political stuff. Maybe you and I can go there.
Well, my new piece is called Welcome to Un-America. And the headline, the picture for it is a flag upside down. And that's traditionally a sign of distress. If a ship is going to sink, they will turn the flag upside down so people know, please come help us. Kind of the ultimate mayday. And that's because our reverence to the flag. You would never do something like that unless you were in profound distress. And the sight of it kind of shocks people. And I think the Biden administration, I don't call him President Biden. I call him Joe, quote, President Biden, like it's his nickname.
Actually, why don't we call him by his real name, Vice President Biden?
There we go.
Or President Adonijah, the usurper. President Adonijah, the usurper, Vice President Biden. You know, John, we have to talk about this, right? Because I certainly have never... how do I put this? I'm arguing that we, as Americans, have never been where we are right now. We have a president who, in many ways, is not the president. In other words, you've got a very, very strange situation legally, constitutionally,
morally.
Because, well, morally for sure, but moral is easy because we are all dealing with morality every day. But when you talk about the Constitution, when you talk about the legality, it's an extraordinary thing to think that we have someone who in many ways was clearly inaugurated as the president. In other words, a lot of stuff happens, a lot of legal stuff goes into place. But we also have the situation where innumerable millions of Americans are convinced that something was not on the up and up. I think Rand Paul is calling for an investigation. I'm not sure what can be done, well, but if you cannot get into this, if you cannot investigate these kinds of things. So I don't really know how one proceeds when you don't actually acknowledge him as the president. I mean, it's
well, here's the thing, Eric.
We are
no longer both democratic and legitimate. We have a, if you want to talk about whether the government is legitimate, St. Paul regarded Caesar as legitimate. He was the de facto ruler, and you were supposed to obey his laws except when they were so unjust that it was worth courting martyrdom to resist. The Christian subjects of the Ottoman Empire probably pretty quickly accepted the Sultan or the Caliph as legitimate in the sense that you didn't want to have a running military revolt against them, and you kind of bent your head and accepted you were a conquered subject of a foreign regime. In that sense, this government is legitimate in the sense that a caliph or a Caesar was legitimate in that we have to obey it up to the point of where it orders us to do something evil, and then we have to resist. And resistance is governed by the just war principles. The just war principles are what tell us not to take to the streets with an AR-15, not to blow things up. Just war covers revolution too. And one of the debates among the American founders was, did what the British were doing to the American colonists rise to the level that it was worth starting a civil war? And for a while, they said no until they said yes. One of the key factors in determining whether a war is just or a revolution is just, I think the two factors that matter right now are, does it have a reasonable likelihood of success? And that's clearly not. No, I think. And secondly, would it cause more destruction? Would it likely cause more destruction than it would fix? Right. I think both of those things tell us we have to be resolutely nonviolent and civil and peaceable in dealing with this imposed foreign regime. Foreign in the sense that Chinese money helped put it in power. Foreign in the sense, in the more profound sense, that we're being ruled by a caste, a kind of Brahmin caste. Cast of people who determined when Donald Trump won that they would never let him really take office. They would keep investigating him and undermining him and surveilling him and lying about him, using their power in the media, which was almost absolute, their power in big tech. So what we face is half the country is being ruled by the other half. And what are really the closest thing, Eric, there is a precedent for this in America. It is after the Civil War, after the slaves were freed, while Northern troops were still there, blacks were finally made citizens and given the right to vote. And they elected black Congress and black senators, and in a few states, black governors, because there was a black majority in South Carolina, and they elected a black governor. And the white Southerners, a lot of them, most of them, the leaders, the powerful ones, they reacted exactly the way that the left, the Democrats, and the media reacted in 2016 when Donald Trump was elected. They said, no, no, we are going to be the resistance. We're being occupied. We are being controlled by people who have no right to vote, no right to any voice. They're supposed to know their place, and we're going to put them down again. And within a few years, they managed to overthrow the mixed race governments of those Reconstruction states and impose white rule, minority rule that disenfranchised and terrorized the black citizens of those states. That's what the left has in mind for you and me today.
Well, unfortunately, that's correct. Now, I just find it funny, John, that you and I both went to Yale. So we come from working class backgrounds, you know, Queens, New York. And we ended up living out the American dream, going to a place like Yale University, where we were exposed to the people about whom we are now talking. We were exposed to the cultural elites and their globalist worldview, the politically correct language. I mean, the cancel culture and the silencing was going on when you and I were there in the 80s. And we remember it. It's sort of like, if you don't behave this way, you'll be demonized and that kind of thing. Hey, this is a good opportunity for me to plug my book, Fish Out of Water. I write about this in my book, Fish Out of Water. I write about my experiences at Yale and about the very thing we're talking about. I remember an episode where, you probably remember this, the class of 84, that was my class, was voting on, do we divest from South Africa? And I had a friend, I write about him in the book. He's politically liberal Democrat, but a very, very dear friend. And he is featured in the book, Chris Haynes, on the Yale Record, the humor magazine, with me. And he's an economist. And so he said, I think that's a bad idea. I remember we voted. Now, this story is in the book in detail, but we voted at Yale as a class. And a friend of mine, Sam, had been manning the ballot box. And the next day he told me that your buddy Chris Haynes voted the wrong way. Huh. And I remember, because I was raised by a mom and dad, and again, I write about this in the book in detail, but they knew the evil of communism. I remember my mother explaining to me about how, they have votes in communist countries, but everybody votes for the same person. I thought, that doesn't make any sense, whatever. So I remember this chilling moment when my dear friend Sam said this to me. I thought, what did you say? Like, you know how Chris voted. How do you know that? You're not supposed to know that. You're supposed to man the ballot box, but you know that. And you're telling me he voted the wrong way. And I'll never forget. I mean, imagine, this is either 83 or 84. I just remember suddenly like hitting a brick wall and thinking, I'm in America and you just told me something that I would expect like young, Maoists to say during the Cultural Revolution or something like that. But you and I lived through this. And I just wanted to
We got to see those schmucks in their formative years, and now they've taken over the country.
Schmuck means jewelry, by the way. Look it up, folks. We'll be right back with John Zmirak, whom I will let talk. Thank you. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to John Zmirak, and occasionally he talks back to me, and then I interrupt him. So, John, you and I were at Yale, and I write about it in my book, Fish Out of Water, but I bring this out just because we've lived this. We come from the working class background. We understand good, evil, God, and then we get launched into this environment at Yale University, which I write about. And this, all these years later, you and I are right in the middle of this. We're experiencing the left doing what they were doing on campus.
Only now
they grew up.
Now they have the FBI and the NSA and Twitter and Facebook and the Chinese government all on their side. Back then, they were just, you know, kids with zits like us. They had more money and lower IQs. They were probably legacies. They inherited their chair at Yale because their parents gave money. So the same people with 110 IQs and huge ideas of their own importance and abilities and moral rectitude are still making our lives miserable. We rarely never did escape that place, did we? Are they billing us for tuition? Are we still at Yale? Do you know?
Did you just mention John Kerry? Because a picture of him just flashed before my eyes with the Botox.
Worse. You know what's even worse than the assault on democracy? There's one thing that's worse. The fact that one side can apparently steal an election and then forbid anyone to investigate it and now forbid anyone to talk about it. You will get your YouTube's pulled down. You will get kicked off of Facebook or Twitter. If you're on Parler, they will shut Parler down. Soviet. The way that worked.
In hour one today, I talked about this. YouTube has shut us down for a week. Gigantic loss of revenue, loss of being able to speak to our audience, because they determined that evidently what we were putting out on YouTube is evil. And you know, all of the kiddie porn, hey, my bad, it won't happen again. But we put out generally wonderful stuff on YouTube, but they shut us down. They knocked me off of Twitter. And you're right. If ever you needed a clue as to who believes in American values, well, here we are.
But it's worse. It's worse than that, because you can have a decent society without democratic elections. I think the Austro-Hungarian monarchy was great. Britain in the 17th century wasn't a 18th century wasn't a terrible place. They weren't democracies. But what you do need is rule of law. You need the same set of laws to apply equally to everyone in the population. We don't have that anymore. Currently, the FBI and the media are trying to criminalize support for Donald Trump's challenge of the election. Being a criminal, however, means different things in America. Joe Biden just set free more than 10,000 felons who were illegal aliens who were supposed to be deported. He just turned them loose on our streets. You know what? They're not going to be in the neighborhoods where Twitter executives and Yale trustees live. They're going to be hitting the streets and hitting the neighborhoods where a lot of Donald Trump's voters live. So that's one thing. But if you're in the hive is the term I've coined for the media elites and the political left working together seamlessly like termites, following one central plan, never thinking for themselves. If you're in the hive, there are one set of laws. If you're out, for instance, Kyle Rittenhouse trying to defend people's businesses. Mark and Patricia McCluskey trying to defend their own home. Jake Gardner trying to defend his business. Carter Page, George Papadopoulos, Mike Flynn just supported Donald Trump. Ashley Babbitt maybe committed trespassing going into the U.S. Capitol. They all felt the sting of persecution. You know who didn't? Hillary Clinton, Senator Dianne Feinstein, who broke the law and probably perjured herself regarding Brett Kavanaugh. Representative Eric Swalwell, who gave secrets to China, whether he intended to or not. Christine Blasey Ford, who perjured herself. Julie Swetnick, who perjured herself. Peter Stroke, who violated all sorts of laws and abused his power at the FBI. James Comey, Hunter Biden. None of them will see the inside of a courthouse, much less a jail cell. But Kyle Rittenhouse, who used a legal gun to help somebody defend his business against a mob of arsonists led by a child molester, we're having to raise millions of dollars. I gave $500 I don't have to try to keep him from going to prison for murder, for defending himself against three people who were trying to kill him. Two-tiered system of justice, just like Jim Crow South, just like apartheid South Africa.
Well, you know, this has been talked about for the longest time, the double standard, the two-tiered system of justice. But right now, we're just seeing it. And this is what's so extraordinary. I noticed that my Bonhoeffer book is selling on Amazon. Like suddenly you can notice the number. And I thought it's because I think a lot of people have heard me talk about how this happened before, right? And I think people always go immediately to the death camps. Forget the death camps. You don't need to go that far to understand how horrifying it would be to live in a culture where you are not free, where if you say the wrong thing, I mean, actually, I'll plug my fish out of water book as much as possible. I talk about my grandfather, that's my mother's dad in Germany, listening to the BBC with his ear literally pressed against the radio speaker. Because if you were caught listening to the BBC, you'd go to a concentration camp. In other words, imagine that happened in Germany. We're not talking about, you know, Khmer Rouge. We're talking about a civilized culture that kind of took its eye off the ball just long enough that evil swept in. We are there now. Now, I don't think it's irrevocable.
It's not irrevocable, but it's inexorable unless we push back really hard.
Absolutely.
I mean, Eric, it has passed my mind to change my name in case the IRS cracks down on the nonprofit where I work. It's a ministry, actually. In case it becomes impossible for me to make a living, I'm thinking, well, how could I still use my education? Well, maybe I'll legally change my name and still claim the same degree. They probably won't look it up and check. And if they do look it up and say, well, we don't have anyone of that name, I'll say, well, no, I changed my name because I now identify as a different gender. And I just won't say anything else. I won't explain it. I don't have to do anything about it. I changed gender, so I changed names, but I still do have a PhD. I still have a Yale BA. I mean, I'm actually thinking this stuff through in America, thinking, you know, what if it becomes impossible for someone like me to make a living? I mean, I've got a bad back. I can't just bag groceries. You know, I would want to teach. But I mean, it's crazy that we have to think this way. But we are facing an intolerant new false religion, which, as I've argued several times at the stream.org, is the religion of Antichrist.
I'm sorry to agree, but yes, there's no doubt about it.
Let me explain.
I want to say that I do believe that we are being allowed to taste this evil because we've had it too good. I don't believe that there's no way out, but God is forcing people to see the fruit of doing nothing. So go ahead.
Yeah. Antichrist is not someone who walks around waving a banner. I am evil. Worship Satan. Antichrist is supposed to be able to fool even the elect if the time were permitted. I'm not saying Joe Biden is the Antichrist. No, I think the religious leaders and the so-called conservative leaders who are telling us we should cooperate with abortion fanatics, with enemies of marriage, with people who want to force little nuns to give out abortion pills or else they have to stop caring for the elderly, sick and dying whom they care for, people who want to propagandize children and get healthy bodily organs cut off because of brief adolescent anxiety, people who want to make a suffocating totalitarian environment of media and education where everyone must think alike or be cast out into the outer darkness, and in addition, who want to do it by stealing elections. All those things combine to be something profoundly evil that is a caricature of Christianity. It's still, I mean, the left, most of them are Darwinian nihilists. They believe that we're all just the fruit of ruthless competition. You would think that would make them Randians or ultra-capitalists, but no, they believe in this nihilist basis of society and of life, and then they put a Christian veneer on it. It's like they want Martin Luther King on the surface and Charles Darwin at the base. Right. And of course, that is the definition of something with feet of clay. But bad ideas can go a long way. Nazism was internally inconsistent. Communism is a logical absurdity. But if you have a propaganda machine, and if you can tap into people's emotions, you can win with terrible self-contradictory ideas. That's why we have to argue in ways that move people's hearts or at least make them laugh. I want people to hold the left in contempt. There's not enough contempt on earth for the woke culture. It's tempting to reach down and borrow some from hell, but I resist that temptation.
We're gonna continue this conversation. I get to talk to John Zamirak for the hour. Folks, please go to mypillow.com or mystore.com. Use the code Eric. Go crazy. We'll be right back. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor. Are you concerned about memory loss for yourself or a loved one? Susan Gibson's mother had dementia. Susan prayed God would show her the solution to memory loss. And after many divine encounters combining faith and her background as a pharmacist, Susan founded Vivalore and created Glory Day Brain Booster. Glory Day is a premium quality, all-natural supplement with 5 to 20 times more nutrients than any other memory supplement. It won the award for most innovative healthcare regimen in 2020. Visit Vivalore.com for testimonials about the life-changing improvements people have experienced. Glory Day is for those with normal memory, mild or severe memory loss. Don't wait until your memory slips. The pathology that leads to memory loss starts 20 years before your first memory loss symptom. Vivalore is V-I-V-O-L-O-R at Vivalore.com. Enter promo code 20 for 20% off. The makers pray that God's glory rests on every pill. Vivalore.com, V-I-V-O-L-O-R.com. Folks, I got some embarrassing news to share with you, but you know what? This is just the kind of a show where I don't care. I'm willing to lay my heart, you know, on the line. Here's the issue. Mike Lindell with My Pillow. You may notice that I have a bobblehead of him near me. He's here to remind all of us that when you go to MyPillow.com, you get whopping discounts if you use the code Eric. Okay. Now, there are a lot of people who haven't done that, and we have your names here. And Chris Himes and Albin pointed out to me that there's like three pages of you whose first name is Eric. You yourself, I mean, that's humiliating for me that even though your name is Eric, you're still not willing to use the code Eric. I mean, if you don't want to use it because it's my name, use it because it's your name. But the point is that I see who you are, and I just feel humiliated by this. Please go to mypillow.com. It's okay, Mike. It's going to be okay. Go to mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. You're going to get whopping savings and really high quality products. Did I mention that? Thank you. Folks, welcome back. This is the Eric Metaxas show. We don't mean to make light of the fact that it's a show, but the fact is that John Smerik and I are playing roles. In real life, we're nothing like this. In real life, we're both extremely athletic. We didn't go to Yale, but this is just a fiction that we're putting out there to confuse the globalist elites. John, let's get back to what you were just saying.
So we live in a post-democratic society where conspiracies of the media and urban political machines can steal elections, and the media and the government and the courts collude to prevent you from checking to see if they're stolen and demanding ballot security. I did a piece at stream.org called Lessons from a Time of Trumples, Trump. What have we learned from the Trump experience? And I think the most important thing we learned is the deep state is the real enemy. The deep state being the CIA, the FBI, and all the federal agencies of unfireable career criminals, I mean career government officials, who can't be touched by democratic means. Or they can be, but you need the nerve. Donald Trump got into office. He saw the FBI was spying on him. He saw they were trying to imprison people like General Flynn, people like Carter Page. In retrospect, he should have made his whole presidency about dismantling the deep state. I don't care where the U.S. embassy is in Israel. I'm glad it's in Jerusalem, but you know what? That's not that big a deal in the long run. Middle Eastern peace is nothing in the long run compared to the FBI prosecuting people like the East German Stasi because of their political opinions. So if we ever have another free and fair election in this country again, and I have no idea if we will, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh thing the president has to do is destroy the deep state. I mean, disband the FBI and start a new agency from scratch with small town sheriffs from Oklahoma and Texas. I mean, put out all the documents. Trump should have pardoned Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. He should have taken the documents, demanded the documents, and exposed everything. He should have rendered the CIA, the FBI, and the NSA virtually powerless by exposing all their trade secrets. I'm sorry. I'm not afraid of Russia. I'm not even really as afraid of China as I am of the American secret police.
Well, let me ask you a question, because this is something I've never really understood. You and I grew up hearing about Eisenhower's military industrial complex. Yeah. He gave a speech. I don't remember when. You probably do.
It was toward the end of his term in office.
Okay. Is the military industrial complex warned about by Ike? Is that something like the deep state?
Yes, except now the deep state has the media and social media and academia all on its side. Back in the 1960s, when J. Edgar Hoover was spying on Martin Luther King and trying to blackmail him, if that got out to the New York Times, they would write a story about it and expose it, and it would be could be rebuffed. When the media are on the side of the secret police, when the judges are on the side of the secret police, then there's no recourse. Exposing them doesn't matter. Look what they did to Carter Page. Look what they did to George Papadopoulos. Look what they did to Mike Flynn. They got away with it. None of those people lost their pensions. None of them went to jail. None of them even lost their power. When Donald Trump tried to find an effective, honest attorney general, couldn't find one. 4 years, never had one. Put people in charge of agencies, and they just disobeyed those people's orders. My friend Robert Riley, who you've had on your show, was appointed head of Voice of America. All his employees just disobeyed him en masse. They just flouted
it's
his
very,
wishes.
It's funny because he was, we just
wait,
had,
let me finish. He was go, just go, go. Escorted out of the building by security guards once Biden took over. He never got to do anything because appointing a Republican to run a federal agency is like changing the kind of cherry on top of a cake that is seven layers of rat poison.
Seven layers of rat poison.
Seven layers of rat poison cake. We elect a Republican president. He puts a black cherry on top instead of a red cherry. But all those government bureaucrats who've been appointed or come up through the ranks, they all think alike. They are hot. No matter what our petty little votes say, they're going to keep doing what they were doing. And that's what we learned, is that we elected a president, but we never actually had a president. Donald Trump was never permitted to govern. The hive said, no, you people voted wrong. In 4 years, you're going to do it again. And this time you're going to get it right. And in case you don't get it right, we'll fix it for you. And they did.
Well, I guess the question becomes, to quote William F. Buckley Jr., the question becomes what we can do. You write in your article about, and I agree with you so wholeheartedly, John, that first of all, we've got to do everything we can do. Number one, if you believe in the God of the Bible, you have the power of prayer. Now that, by the way, folks, is significant. Here's a little secret. It's real. I do believe that the prayers of the saints, of God's holy remnant, are heard by God, and they are going to be, in fact, already are being answered. We don't know how. So that's the first thing we can and must do, is pray with profound faith. When we come back, we'll tell you what else we can do. We'll be right back.
Reach, make like the world's your pudding, but like the brandy.
Snow, cement, and ivory on towers.
Folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak, Z-M-I-R-A-K. Until he changes his name, it's John Zmirak. John, what else can we do? You write about it in the article at stream.org.
Well, we can keep our own institutions strong and not let the gaslighting affect us. In other words, our church leaders, when they start collaborating with the Biden regime, when they start soft-pedaling the hundreds of ways in which Biden and his ideology are in conflict with Christianity and our worldview, and instead they play up, well, you know, he's against poverty, that's good. Let's just work with him on anti-poverty stuff and forget about the baby killing and the churches closing and the totalitarian control of media. But, you know, we could do soup kitchens. And then also, let's denounce anyone to the right of us who is loud about the election and the election fraud. We can throw them under the bus. And that way, Right. Maybe we'll get sent to the concentration camp later. Maybe we can even help run the concentration camp as capos. We'll be the religious leaders in the camps, and we'll get more cheese and maybe some more dark bread.
Oh, this is so sick. Whoever thought, ladies and gentlemen, we would get to this point. But John, in your article, too, you talk about supporting people who have stood strong. I think this is what I was talking about earlier, is that, first of all, if you don't think you're in the battle, ladies and gentlemen, you're in the battle. You have a voice. There's a lot you can do. God will forgive you for having stood aside while others like John or me or Mike Lindell or whoever it is have been fighting. But I just want to tell you, we need you in the battle. In other words, when we have to, when you hear about somebody like Mike Lindell, John, you write about this. Tell my audience what you say about that.
Yeah. Stop supporting institutions that don't support us. Meaning magazines like National Review, which demonize Trump supporters and wave off the election fraud as if it were a joke. Stop supporting writers who threw the president under the bus based on nothing except their own desire to maybe appear on NPR and flog their latest spiritual autobiography. Support companies like MyPillow. You know, a lot of people gave up on Fox News after it stabbed us in the back and started watching Newsmax and Real America's Voice and One America News. Stick with that. Only support people who support us. Anyone you see is trying to sign up with the new Vichy regime, wants to become the respectable face of Republicanism, so they're attacking Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley or Eric Metaxas or Franklin Graham or other people who have stood strong in the wake of this debacle, this coup d'etat in the middle of the night. Don't support those people. Don't worry about what they have to say. Stop reading them. Stop listening to them. Spam filter their emails. Block them on Twitter, assuming you haven't been banned from Twitter. Stop associating with compromised sellouts and hacks. Even if you agree with something they say, don't share it. Don't help these people. They want nothing to do with you. They have thrown you under the bus. You could hear all four wheels going over you. Do not cooperate with the collaborators. Stick with the people who stayed strong. We have to build a real resistance here to an evil, ruthless regime.
Well, you know,
we don't need sellouts in our midst.
80 million Americans approximately voted for Donald Trump. OK, now we know that they are not all violent nationalists. The demonization of Trump supporters is the craziest thing imaginable. In other words, these are the people who elected the president of the United States. These are the people who ostensibly elected him a second time in a landslide. But the point is, there are so many of them. And the genius of the left and of totalitarians is that they pretend that, no, those are just a handful of extremists. Well, those handfuls of extremists have to make their voices known. If you don't, folks, I'm telling you, if you shop at a place like Kohl's after they have banned Mike Lindell for daring as a free American to say what he thinks,
or Bed Bath and Beyond,
or if you shop at Bed Bath and Beyond, if you shop at HEB, if you shop at these places, I just want to tell you, you're participating in helping organizations that have used their considerable power against you and against freedom. Now, these are the little things we can do, but if we are not willing to do those things, we will lose, and we certainly deserve to lose. So I put that out there at number one. But John, what else can we do? I mean, that's, people keep asking me.
Stop sending your kids to public schools. I don't think there are probably any parts of the country where public schools are not now engaged in propagandizing your kids. Highland Park School District, fancy school district in Texas. In terms of quality, it's like an elite prep school. People buy grossly overpriced houses in the neighborhood so that they can send their kids to the school. But it just put in transgender bathrooms, and it's going to be teaching that stuff in the schools. If you care enough to have children, if you're going to bother having children, you know, that's an open question. But if you're going to bother having children, worry about their immortal souls. Worry about whether they turn out as real traditional Americans, or are they just going to be addled zombies obeying the orders of the termite colony? I mean, look at Kellyanne Conway. Kellyanne Conway builds this wonderful career, sends her kid to this elite leftist hellhole, and she comes out practically a maniac and hating her parents' values and her parents and everything they stand for. That's what the left counts on, because they have a lower birth rate. They don't have as many kids. They don't welcome life. They don't embrace life. They prefer to have a Shih Tzu or a Persian cat. So they count on parasitically taking our kids and reprogramming them to be actually their kids. So
it almost worked on me in my book. I probably haven't mentioned it. I have a book coming out called Fish Out of Water, and I write about my experience at Yale and how I really was affected by that. In other words, I grew up in a home where we were very, very patriotic. We loved freedom, and my father and mother taught me to hate communism and all stuff. But at Yale, because I didn't have the IQ of a, say, John Zmirak, I just kind of drifted with the zeitgeist until my soul was in danger. God dramatically saved me from that. But I just want to say, I experienced this. This is part of why I wrote the book, John, is because I feel that I want people to understand where I was before God, in his mercy, rescued me. We're going to be right back. We continue our conversation with John Zmirak. Folks, I'm talking to John Zmirak. John, what's on your mind?
Well, Eric, I think you blame yourself a little too much. I think part of what happened to you and the reason that Yale was able to, at least for a while, have this enervating brainwashing effect on you is that you grew up in a nice place in Connecticut with pleasant schools full of, you know, really rather nice people. And so you kind of learned to think that the environment we were in was a friendly place and probably trustworthy. Correct. I stayed in Queens. I stayed in Astoria, Queens, where, you know, it was a Darwinian struggle for survival. You know, having grown up in New York before Giuliani, you can't startle me. I expect people to jump out from behind pillars. You can run, you know, like jump from behind a pillar and go, blah, and I'll go, yeah, I kind of expected that. So, I mean, when I showed up at college, and it's funny, I had a conversation with my girlfriend about this. She said, it must have been tempting when you were at Yale and you saw all these people thought one way, you know, to change your views to make your life easier. And I said, I can't take credit for any courage, Faye, much as I'd like to. That idea of conforming never even flickered through my mind. I was waiting for all these dumb people to conform to me. So I'm not sure that's the grace of God or just mulish Irish stubbornness I got from my mom.
I think it's both. Look, in my own defense, I didn't know what I believed. That's what I find so fascinating. And this is the failure of the Greek Orthodox Church, for example. It's pathetic. Yeah. I mean, they don't teach you anything about the meaning of life. Is the Bible true? Whatever. You know, this is mainly the case in these ethnic church communities, whether Catholic or Orthodox. And so they send you like a sheep to the slaughter. So I went to Yale. Did I really believe in the resurrection from the dead of the second person of the Trinity? Did I believe in the Trinity? Did I believe in the Bible? What did I believe from a faith point of view? And then had the schools prepared me, the public schools prepared me for what lay ahead in wait at a place like Yale? Of course not. I mean, even though I went to a decent public school in Danbury, Connecticut, you know, it's not like they warned me, oh, by the way, you need to really understand what American freedom is, because, you know, when you get out there in the real world, you're going to see these forces is trying to attack it. So I really did go without any warning, and it's only God's grace that pulled me out.
What we need to do is not put our kids in environments like that anymore. For the longest time, homeschooling was seen as sort of an eccentric choice or something only really committed hardcore people did. It has to become the mainstream choice for Christians in America, for conservatives in America. I'm sorry, take the financial hit. Somebody's got to stay home and homeschool the kids, or don't bother having them. It's just a choice.
John, I tell you something. As I've traveled around the country doing a lot of speaking, I have met these homeschool kids and their parents. These kids are genuinely the hope of the future. They are amazing, amazingly bright, amazingly well-educated, freedom-loving, God-loving souls.
It's independent-minded. I taught at a college, and I had some homeschool kids and a bunch of other kids who went to even the Catholic schools. The homeschooled kids were 3 or 4 grade levels ahead of the others. They were independent-minded. They were confident. They were smart. They were sharp. They're the kind of people who are going to lead if our worldview has any chance in the world. If Christianity, Orthodox Christianity, small-o Orthodox Christianity, is going to remain a viable option in America, if it's not going to become an obscure denomination that is reluctantly tolerated by the government because it's so small, it's insignificant, like polygamous Mormons or something. It's going to be through homeschoolers whose parents take them to the gun range and teach them trades, because we're going to have to live in an alternative culture stuck in this hostile, foreign, occupied country.
We're out of time. John Zmierich, always a real privilege to have you on this program. Thank you, my friend. To be continued.
Thanks.